Welcome to the Sharp 600, brought to you by Covers.com. I'm Rob Cressy, and I'm super excited to be jamming with you. And joining me to recap the Super Bowl and lessons we learned, plus jam about some hoops, is Sean Lockhart, sports betting consultant. You can follow him on Twitter at Del Rio Papa Bear. Sean, great to have you back on the show.
Thanks for having me back on, Rob. Love coming and talking about the Super Bowl and then also college hoops, because that's what we're going to be betting here for the next couple months.
So what we're going to do is we're going to look at the Super Bowl and say, what did we learn from it? Because there will be Super Bowls in the future, and every game is an opportunity for us to learn something about our mindset and decision-making. And then, of course, with the football done, we want to say, what can we bet on next? College basketball is the next big thing. We got conference tournaments on the horizon, and then March Madness. So we want to make sure that we prepare you to say, hey, how can I be informed if I want to throw a few jelly beans on some college hoops? But let's start with the Super Bowl. And I really enjoyed myself. I had 26 bets on the Super Bowl. Many of them, I know that I wasn't as certain on the spread or which side am I going to take. Why? Because there was no value there whatsoever. But I was fortunate enough to be on the Bucks money line, which made this a very enjoyable Super Bowl for me, but it does not mean that everything that I bet was around the Bucks money line. In actuality, it was the opposite of that. I was just playing the props. So I want to talk about a few things that we learned during the Super Bowl. But first, what was your experience and perception like of the Super Bowl from a betting perspective?
I thought it was a great game. I didn't go too heavy. I actually had more money on the Saturday before the Super Bowl on college hoops. I think it's one of the sharpest lines around, as you mentioned. It's not to get involved in the spread is a little bit dangerous, but I did have some action. I got on the Chiefs. I was on the wrong side of that Super Bowl, which I don't like. And then I went 2-2 on props. So I didn't bet 26 wagers. I know a lot of people love to dive into that. I kept it pretty light. I generally see the Super Bowl as the sports books, the book's main event of the year as well. And I think a lot of those lines are just super sharp. And I'm more of a mod. I dip my toe in, but I don't go overboard. That's just how I am. I'm kind of focused on college hoops right now.
So let's talk about the sharp lines, because I think it's one of the things that I was able to be opportunistic on, because I did have a winning day. In side note, before I get to that, one thing that I've mentioned in the past on the show, and I want to make sure to do it again, is we typically record these episodes on Wednesdays, and I want to do everything that I can to help you be a more informed better, to let you know how I'm thinking, how my guests thinking, what are we seeing in the market, things like that. But in football, with sports betting, and certainly in the Super Bowl, there's just so much information that comes out on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and certainly in terms of the prop side of things. So I want to make sure to let everybody know I'm not holding back on when I did 26 bets. Why was I not releasing a 26 bet podcast? It's because, you know, when I did almost all of my bets on Sunday morning, and the reason for that was because I was on a good majority of unders. And the reason for that, and it's one of the things that I learned both in the Super Bowl and this year with props, is let's call them correlated props. If this, then this. So I faded Daryl Williams. I faded DeMarcus Robinson, and I was on Leonard Fournette. So what did this mean? Daryl Williams, I was on all of his unders because I didn't see Kansas City running the ball a ton. Clyde Edwards-Helaire was back in the game. DeMarcus Robinson, I didn't see him getting a ton of action. His total was like 1.5 receptions and 20 yards over under. So boom, stacking a bunch of unders there. That's like 4 or 5 wins when you can get that. Of course, it becomes risk or reward, because all of a sudden it takes one catch here or there to bust all of it. But with the way that I saw the Super Bowl, I was fortunate that when I faded players, I was able to rack up multiple wins in a row. And then on the Leonard Fournette side of things, I was fortunate enough to get him both on the receiving receptions over 3.5. But here's the key one, and this is the first time I ever did this, and I learned about this. I had Leonard Fournette to have the most rushing yards in the game. And I actually had the same for Travis Kelce, most receiving yards. So this is something where it allowed me to play essentially the over on their total without having to play the over on their total. And Leonard Fournette, as I looked at the options, it was him versus Ronald Jones in terms of who would get the most rush yards, or so I thought. So that's how I was able to get plus money at plus 175, as opposed to taking his total, which maybe it was at like 80 yards for his rushing, and get a better line there. And on the Travis Kelce side of things, same thing, albeit he had a lot more competition with Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, Tyreek Hill for top receiver. But it was a new thing that I threw into my arsenal that I was fortunate enough to go 2-0 on that were both in plus money.
I like that, especially if you wait till Sunday to bet, as you said, taking, not backing the over on total yards or for Kelce, you know, the different, I wish I would have whipped on that because I was on the Chiefs, so I couldn't bring myself to bet the Tyreek Hill under, the Travis Kelce under any, because I was going to be rooting for the Chiefs. And as you said, you want to cash bets that are core aligned with your, the big bet. I put a larger bet down the Chiefs, and I was able to find, I bet on some Bucks props, but it just was not a good Super Bowl for me. But that's why I kept it light. I was on the Cameron Brate over reception yards, 26 and a half. He ended right on 26 yards. That's how sharp some of these lines are. And I swear on one of his receptions too, he was a one more yard. I thought he got a 7-yard catch. They ruled it as a 6-yard catch. What can you do? But overall, I liked my season was good on football, but my Super Bowl performance was not something that I was too thrilled about.
So as I put a button in terms of the process for both the Super Bowl and during the week, for me, it is a process of gathering information. In the Super Bowl, there's a blessing and a curse. The amount of information is overwhelm. No matter where you go, you're going to find someone who is on the side that you want or that you don't want. So there can be an element of confirmation bias or conflicting information. You might say, I like this, and I might be like, I'm on the other side. And you're like, wait a second, I like both of these guys. What do I do in this case? So that's why for me, a lot of what my process would be is I'm looking for edges, and I'm looking where all of a sudden some of my sources, you start seeing something like, I wasn't on the bet, but Scotty Miller, I saw four people that I trust say, I want the under on Scotty Miller. One was on his total yards. One was on his longest reception. And I ended up not doing it, but it was a great example for me of four sources that I trust. And just seeing that makes me say, well, maybe I'll dig a little bit deeper into what are they seeing on the Scotty Miller side of things. And I find that that's a simple way where you can at least evaluate what are some potential betting options.
I like that. So did he go over, or he went under that total, right?
I don't even think he had a reception. I think he had one rush for negative yards. I didn't see him anywhere in the game.
It was such a strange game. I didn't think that the Chiefs missing, and I should have saw that too, the Pro Bowl, Eric Fisher, the center. Every time Patrick Mahomes went back to pass, he was under pressure. I think it was something ridiculous. You compare the pressure rates, Brady to Mahomes. And I think that was the key to the whole Super Bowl and why I probably should have keyed in more on the Bucs. I just did not see that defensive. And I love too, Todd Bowles. He used to coach the Cardinals. And that defensive coaching job was just amazing. And I know Brady got the MVP, and you don't bet against the GOAT. Now he's won the GOAT debate. But, man, that coaching, it was just a huge coaching. I did not see that coming. I was just so – I know you were on the happy end of the Super Bowl, and I'm proud you made some money, Rob. It's great, especially all those bets you put down. But, yeah, the Super Bowl Sunday was kind of a bummer for me. But as I said, I had more money this Saturday before on college hoops. That's what I've been kind of focused on lately. So overall on the weekend, I ended in the positive.
So let's actually get to what you said there. I didn't see it coming because I started to do some research after the fact. And I'm like, all right, of course, I didn't see this coming either. It's why I just sprinkled Bucks plus 140. I wasn't like, this is everything I'm doing. It was one of 26 bets for me. But one of the things that I've preached over and over on this show is get comfortable being uncomfortable. And remember, there is no such thing as a free ATM in sports betting. And you know what was a free ATM to most people? Chiefs over, Tyreek Hill over, Tyreek Hill over yards, where we create this narrative in our heads of what we would like to see happen. And there is a percentage that all of those, like a friend of mine came with that strategy. He's like, I was talking to a friend of mine and what he said is he's going to be betting all the Chiefs over, and he thinks that he's going to play an alternate line Chiefs over and just stack on all of this. And I was like, that makes sense. I would probably say there's a 30% chance that the Chiefs win by double digits, all the overs hit, and you are just straight rolling in money. But guess what? That means there's a 70% chance that the other things don't happen. And I think with the way that betting is maturing and people caring less about where they get their information in bets and more on the action side of things, I really see an evolution on how you want to bet. So you and I could sit on this show and say, all right, here's four scenarios for you. You want to have fun, bet or parlay, Chiefs over, Chiefs alternate line, Kelce over, Hill over, boom, have a blast if that happens. On the flip side, you can say you want to be someone who fades everything, go and do this, this, and this. And I looked back at some of the past Super Bowls, and remember, the Patriots held the Rams to just 3 points, and that Super Bowl was like 13-3. And then I think about the Seahawks Broncos, where the first play is a snap over Peyton Manning's head and the Seahawks blow them out. So when you said, I just didn't see this coming, well, this happens on, I don't know, every 4 years, every 5 years of a, I didn't see this coming. But welcome to the Super Bowl, the biggest game on the biggest stage for everybody's career. So I believe there's a higher variance of we didn't see this coming. So if we naturally say, well, let's get comfortable being uncomfortable, what is everybody doing? And is there a way for me to either one, fade that, or two, look in the weeds of the Demarcus Robinsons and the Darrell Williamses of the world, where there is likely to be less variance than there would be on the Tyreek Hills of the world?
I like what you said there. And it makes sense after the game too. Everyone who backed the Bucks, they're, oh, I'm a genius, I saw this coming.
Right.
And like, I was confident in my, I really thought the Chiefs were going to win that Super Bowl. It's the way it, the Super Bowl always magnifies those things in the gambling world. And it is, Sunday night I was on Twitter and, you know, the Bucks backer, everyone's just beating their chest. And I get that. It's great to win the Super Bowl. But to me, it's just another day. I mean, I think the Monday following the Super Bowl, I probably had more money on college basketball than I had on that game. So to me, I was wrong. I like to admit it. I can learn from it. As you said, we always like to learn from our losses. But it's on to the next day for me.
So we will end the Super Bowl on this. You know, I'm not someone who would beat my chest because I just said the Bucs is a complete crapshoot. And I was actually looking in live betting. So all year and for the last few years, anytime the Chiefs have been getting points or in plus money, that's been an auto bet. And it was strange. Even though I was on the Bucks plus 140, I looked and I was like, am I crazy to not just take the Chiefs at plus money to automatically create a winner for myself right here? And I didn't do it for the sake of the Super Bowl and wanting to pick the side, but it was weird that this seemed like the automatic live betting. At one point, they were plus 15.5, and this just didn't go that way. I'm curious your thoughts on the live betting side, because it just seemed so obvious, yet I didn't do it, and I'm not sure why.
I didn't want to jump in. I did bet. I tweeted it out too at halftime because the Chiefs were receiving the kickoff in the second half. It was Chiefs to score first on their very first drive was minus 135. Just to score first overall was minus 150. And I did get a little live bet there, but I did not bet the Chiefs second half on the spread by any means, just because I didn't like anything what I was seeing from that offensive line. And it just, when a game kind of snowballs one direction, I didn't want to. I was already staked on the Chiefs minus 3, so I did get that live bet in. But I didn't. I think the Chiefs were like, what was it, like minus 8.5, minus 9.5 at half to come back. And I know a lot of people piled on that, just as they did. You brought up that Super Bowl when the Seahawks just rolled Peyton Manning, the Broncos. I remember many people jumped on the Broncos at halftime, like, oh, they're going to get back in this. They're going to get back in this. And it just snowballed out of control. I didn't want anything to do with it. So it was a sad Sunday, Rob. As you're bringing up all these memories, and it is, it's always, you want to get the biggest, the Super Bowl, the biggest game of the year. You want to get right for myself and my clients, but I didn't get it. But overall, it was a successful weekend. So that's, I always look kind of bigger picture.
And for me, it's all about trusting your process. It doesn't mean we're going to be right every single time, but did you do the things that you would normally do? And remember, this is the biggest square game of all of them. So there's no value. We don't have 16 games to choose from. So treat this as it is. It's why we always preach bankroll management, because I love what you said. Hey, I only had a few prop bets here and there where you weren't like me and said, Rob, I went 5-21 on 26 bets. It's like you were at least within your means of understanding what this is. And it's why I'm so preachy about your process and your mindset, because that's how you can create long-term winning by understanding how you're evaluating things. Doesn't mean you're always going to be on the right side, but if you said, I've got my sources, I've got my process, I'm at least confident in my process, because Cameron Brake goes over 1 yard or under 1 yard, that's oftentimes the margin of victory, defeat in betting.
I love your mindset there. And it is, it's all big picture. You can get down on yourself, beat yourself up for making the complete wrong decision, because it did end up being a blowout and you look like a goof. But then, like I said, there's the next day, there's 30 college basketball games on Monday. So
let's get to those college hoops. So now that football's done, it's like, what in the world do we bet on? And certainly we've got NHL and NBA, but college basketball is heating up. And for me, right now is the perfect time to start getting into college basketball, because you'll get ahead of everybody in your office pools who are just looking there and being like, Illinois is a top 10 team. What? And if you can just be a little bit more informed. So I want to start with sort of some rapid fire questions for you to help us increase our knowledge, because as I'm looking at the top 25, I see two undefeated teams, Gonzaga and Baylor. And there was a great tweet from Covers that showed the futures to win the title this year. And right now, Baylor and Gonzaga are in a class of themselves. So we're seeing somewhere around plus 350 for Baylor and plus 280 for Gonzaga. The next one we're seeing is Villanova at plus 1,000. So there seems like there's a big tier difference between the two. We're not used to seeing Baylor up there. Gonzaga, we've seen them from Adam Morrison and Richie Fromm to where we are right now. What are your thoughts on those two, and is there a big tier difference?
There's a huge tier difference with those. It's amazing how much better those teams are almost in the rest of the field. I mean, there's 350 schools in Division One or that have Division One basketball teams, and to have two that are that much better than everyone else is kind of shocking. And to get through a whole tournament, there might be that one game where you catch them, but I really do see both of them making the Final Four. And if they do both make the Final Four, I think it's easy. They're going to be in the championship. I really do. I see Baylor as slightly better right now, but I think that'd be the game that everybody would want to watch. There are some long shot teams that I could give you that I think if they start peaking, and there could always be injuries too. I mean, Suggs is dealing with injuries for Gonzaga, but it's almost kind of boring that they're that much better than everyone else. And then Gonzaga is going to have a cakewalk the rest of the season too, playing in that conference. So I can't give you a long, because even if that long shot got to the Final Four, I would probably hedge out, because I think they could easily get crushed. Gonzaga is almost like 10 points better, I think, than almost any other team that would make that Final Four if you compare Baylor and Gonzaga. So it is kind of a boring year from that standpoint.
What is it about Baylor? Because they're a team you would see that, and I think there's going to be a good amount of people come March Madness that are going to see Baylor as overall number one or 1B and look at that and be like, well, I'm going to have them lose because it's Baylor. We're not used to seeing Baylor as the best team in the nation. So what is it about them that makes this team so good, because it's unexpected to the casual fan?
It's consistency on both sides of the ball though. And then they have like multiple players that are averaging or can score in double figures. So you can shut down one. There's not one guy you have to shut down, because if they do, they'll just rotate the ball around and find another guy to hit a wide open shot. They shoot extremely well too. That's what's different. Usually these Baylor teams are really big and physical inside and have incredible athletes, but they don't have shooters. This year, these guys can shoot with the best of them. So they have a little bit of both. And then their defense is just ferocious. They're just physical. It could be a close game at halftime. And then this team could go on a 10-0, 20-0 run at any point in time. And Gonzaga is the same way. Gonzaga hasn't played early in the season. They ran through three, Iowa, I forget who they played, but they played three really strong teams and just kind of blew the doors off everyone. It was kind of shocking in a way. I think Kansas was up there to beat Kansas. But I wouldn't put this as one of those same Gonzaga teams that will get bounced in the Sweet 16 or get bounced even in the first round, or that when Adam Morrison was crying that one time. This Gonzaga team's a lot different than those teams. Just same, similar to well-rounded, but man, it's unbelievable how much better these two teams are than almost every other team. But I actually haven't even been betting on these teams too much or fading them necessarily. Been kind of relying on some other spots. And that's, I did want to give away one tip. If you are going to jump into college basketball betting, which everyone is doing right now, a lot of these small conference games, they're playing back-to-back games, right? They're playing, the same teams are playing back-to-back. Sometimes even the night, that you know, there's not even like a night difference. It's you play on Friday night and you play on Saturday. The same two teams. In the second matchup, I've been making a lot of money off this. You bet the under in the second matchup of these back-to-back games in the small conferences. And it's primarily defensively. And the same as me, like, I grew up playing basketball. It makes a lot of sense to me. If you're guarding the same guy that you were guarding the night before, you know his strengths and his weaknesses, where he wants to go. If the shot clock's getting late in the shot clock, where, what kind of move he's going to put on to get his shot off. And you can interfere that a little bit better. It's something that the algorithms don't really pick up that I've been making a lot of money off of. Just a tip. Take the under, first half under, full game under, unders in the second game of that back-to-back, playing the same exact team.
I love your mindset around this. So I'm also curious in terms of what are you finding yourself playing more in terms of, is it a side or is it totals or is it first halves or second halves? And how do the back-to-backs and COVIDs and small school versus big school, because I know we previously had the crack man on and he likes to talk about going after the small schools because there's just not as much information about them. So there is more of an edge for you versus the sports book. And I'm curious where you're putting your attention right now.
And he's right on the money there. As I said, there's 350 D1 basketball programs. There's a lot of information out there, but it's also a lot of information for the books to stay up with. So I think there is, you can find some small edges, at least it's worked for me this year. And I would, the small conferences I'd agree with too, because you can look at the COVID, if they're missing a player, it's not like the NBA or professional athletes, you're missing a starting player. They're going to bring in another professional off the bench, right? Another guy who's fully capable of almost doing everything that guy's doing. In college basketball, it's not the same, especially in these small schools. You're missing a starter. It might be a walk-on that's coming on. It could be the downgrade is just – it's much more severe in college basketball. And then so I do look at these COVID shutdowns, but not every COVID shutdown is the same. And so you do have to dig into some of these beat writers. There's also – John Rothstein's a great follow on Twitter just for players who's going to play and who's not going to play. But – you can look at who's been practicing, who had to have assistant coaches in practice just to field five on fives, who's been not even practicing. They've just been doing Zoom meetings. And there's all kinds of, I think as the season progresses, these COVID spots will be maybe a little less and less, but that's just been a huge spot. Fading teams coming off of COVID layoffs. Look for a team that hasn't played in a while. They're coming back. They might be a little rusty. Their defense especially might be a little bit rusty. It's just a huge advantage. It's a unique season, obviously, with these COVID situations.
So if you know that, obviously the books know that. They don't create free money opportunities. So if I'm running a sports book, I'm going to say, all right, give me the list of every team coming off playing COVID. So now that we know that, it's obviously baked into the line of things. So what are you finding is the way to be more opportunistic, or are they just not adjusting enough? Almost similar to in the NFL season, week one, two, and three, we're like, how much is home field worth? And it goes from 3 to 2 to 1 to 0, where eventually you're getting 3 points of value. So is it where there's a higher variance on the point spread because a team has a greater chance of getting blown out? Or as you said, over under wise, there could be a variance there.
So I would look with the variance when it comes to home court advantage. In my NFL handicapping, I completely took away home field. It was 0. In college basketball, some venues, I think, the odds makers still are slightly overrating. I mean, Cameron Indoor would be an easy example. You look at Duke, they're 3-12 against the number. If you bet against Duke every game this season, you'd be rich. If you bet against them every game they played at home at Cameron Indoor, you'd be up an incredible amount of money. But there are certain home courts that don't just rely on crowd noise or like Cameron Indoor when the fans are literally on top of you, that I still think there are some home court advantages. And it has to more do with unique venues with like sight lines. And even I remember playing when you're shooting, just the way the rim is, the way the backboard is, it's a unique sight line. The home guy, they practice in there. They're used to shooting in that gym. The road team coming in, especially in the first game, is not. You can look, Minnesota is a unique example of that. They play in what's called like the barn. It's a unique, the court is actually raised. So the sight lines are just completely different. I think they've been like 80% against the spread at home there. It's never a bad idea to take Minnesota at home. I mentioned fading Duke. There's also some other blue bloods that I don't think the odds makers have adjusted towards. I mean, Duke struggling, Michigan State struggling, Kentucky has been awful this year. UNC is down. And just even, I mean, Kentucky's had some bad luck, but you could almost bet against Duke the rest of the season. And I don't think odds makers will ever adjust for it just because there's the average guy who wants to walk up to the window and bet Duke, even though he knows they're bad this year, but he still wants to bet on Duke. And they are just getting crushed this year. They're not the same team. They have no inside presence, and Coach K is crying on conference calls all the time. It's not the same team. I would continue selling on this Duke team until the odds makers make a radical shift. 3-12 against the number. That's easy money. That's free money betting against Duke this year.
I'm glad you brought this up because it was a topic for me, because what's going on? This doesn't make sense to me, because Kentucky and Duke pretty much farm the number one recruits every single year for as long as we've been watching college basketball, and certainly the last 10 years where they're a one and done factory. So now we see Kansas out of the top 25 for the first time since 2009, Kentucky, UNC, Duke. What is going on how is this happening, and how is it happening to all of them? And then I look at the top 25 and there's Rutgers at 25, Loyola Chicago at 22, Illinois at 6, Houston at 8. And I'm like, this makes no sense. Kentucky has the best facilities and the best players always.
It's a unique, I would say it's, they had top recruiting talent. They had top classes. The recruiting's still there, but I think, especially in Kentucky State, I think some of these players were a little bit overrated, and I've never been their coach. He recruits NBA players. I just don't think he's the biggest X's and O's guys. And so then when it starts, you know, it's like a snowball effect when they start losing. Or even last night, Arkansas won for the first time in Kentucky since like 1994 or something crazy. All these trends are breaking. And you could blame it on COVID. I know there is something, I think, to the COVID effect. Every coach is a little different of maybe how they even, I don't know, approach the virus. Or another good Georgia Tech's coach, a pastor, he, when they started the season 0-2, they lost to these small schools because he didn't in practice. He took away all the actual physical contact of practice because of COVID. And that was something unique that most coaches wouldn't. They start 0-2. Now they're Georgia Tech's coming back because now they're practicing like normal. But there's all these little quirks. And I do think it has something to do with a unique COVID virus that's affecting how certain coaches practice or how certain coaches talk to their team mentally. I mean, I think every American's going through certain mental gymnastics during this difficult time. And it's affecting a lot of players and coaches, and even the most talented programs are negatively affected by it. And I think that's what you're seeing. That's the only explanation. I could see maybe one or two of these teams just having a down year, maybe because their talent wasn't as good. But all of them, I think it's certainly a unique thing to look at for sure.
So as we look at conference tournaments in March Madness, I think one of the strategies that many people have done is, let's say some of these blue bloods, and I know a lot of them won't be making it, but for example, Stake, one of them gets there as an 11 and they get put up against a Creighton. So now we've got big school versus small school. You've got pedigree and you look preseason top 25 and one of these teams just squeaks their way in there. And how are you evaluating that? Where is there too much, we're buying on legacy, on opportunity, whereas no, these small schools, they're better and don't get sidetracked from a shiny object.
Now, I think you're spot. They had a name value early in the season. Selling on those schools would have made you a lot of money. Betting Duke, though, I think Duke is, that's the only one of them. But I bought Kentucky, North Carolina, Michigan State even. I think as the season progresses, and if they do make one of these, they're talented enough to make a run in the tournament. I think it would be a better time to buy on them going forward, just because the market's so low on them now. And it is like everyone knows that Duke is 3-12 against the spread. It's the same thing as like that Drake school. They started the season 12-0 against the spread. Everyone was riding them. Everyone was betting on them because average bettors can see that they're at 12-0 ATS. They don't lose. It's like a roulette wheel. If it keeps hitting black, they're going to keep betting black. And now you see Drake, I think they missed 3 of 4 games not covered against the spread. And that's what happens. It's like in a market, like we always talk about, take it like a market. Or that like the AMC, the GameStop stock. It was in the news, everyone got aware of it, then it started cratering. And it's the same thing, I think, with some of these big name teams. You will see some value, I think, going forward in the conference tournament. Kentucky's had a little bit of bad luck. They've lost some close games. But I would buy on some of these teams just because the talent is there heading forward and making a late push into March on some of these big name teams.
So as we wrap this up, do you have any tips for someone who says, you know what, this weekend I want to start dabbling in college basketball? How should they start going about evaluating teams I'm going to take or totals, or help us get started in doing this in an informed way so we can start building a process for ourselves?
So I would jump on KenPom rankings. KenPom rankings are huge. The oddsmakers, I think, take a lot of KenPom to make their lines. I also use teamrankings.com. It's a phenomenal website. So you can look at AP, you know, there's people, I don't take too much like what they're the top 25, what they're ranked. I find edges generally betting against the higher ranked team. I really do. Because you can look at these teamrankings.com and see who's played a tougher schedule, schematically how they line up. But for the novice better, that's what I would look at. Teamrankings.com and Ken Palm and see what I think those are truer rankings, truer ratings of these actual teams than like the AP or, you know, what coaches polls, popularity contests are. And then see if you can find some lines that might be off from if you compare where the line is to what Vegas is. And that's where I'd start. And then I'd also maybe focus, because there's 350 teams, focus on maybe one conference, focus on the Pac-12, focus on the ACC, focus on one, watch all those games, as many as you can. And then focus maybe on betting just one conference before you kind of get into the conference tourneys and March Madness. That'd probably be the easiest way to have the most success getting into betting college basketball just starting.
Love that advice, Sean. Where can everybody connect with you?
I'm at Da Real Papa Bear, D-A-Real R-E-A-L P-A-P-A Bear on Twitter. Always down to chat sports. I throw out freebies all the time. Been making some videos. Been hot on the free investments lately. So maybe follow those college picks going forward for a little bit. Maybe build that bankroll up and then jump in come March.
Love it. Definitely follow Sean on Twitter because we jam all the time and it's just fun to be part of the community. And I want to hear from you. How did your Super Bowl go? Were you positive or negative? And I also want to hear, have you started betting on college basketball? If so, take us a little bit into your process. You can hit me up on Twitter at Rob Cressy. Make sure to use hashtag Sharp600 and be part of our community. And also make sure to tag at Covers. And one thing, if you enjoyed the content we put out on this podcast through the NFL season, throw us a bone. Jump on iTunes, give us a rating and review. And you know what I'll do? I will give you a shout out on the show for showing us some love. And remember, you want to be a sharp, don't be a square with your bankroll. Be disciplined with your money management. The funkadelic devil hit you with the rap level of 10. The 1, 2, 3, your pen. I get action. So everybody jump with your rump. If you like the way the sound pump, pump it in your back trunk. And let loose with the juice when I do rock. I'm too hot. Some say I got more juice than Tupac.